radical left has taken over the Democratic Party.
Hello and welcome to Think Progressively, covering politics and all the other chaos life has to offer. This is episode 121, recorded on Friday, April 26th from Milwaukee. I'm Joe.
And I'm Jason.
And on today's episode, we're going to discuss conservatives' newest boogeyman, DEI. But first, the headlines.
I got along with him well, although he did announce the other day that he'd much rather see Biden as president. And I agree with him. I agree.
First up in headlines, we'll talk about the Trump trial with probably the least significant consequences.
But it has begun.
But the only one that will likely conclude before the election, the hush money criminal trial has begun. And this trial is 34 felony counts related to falsifying business records and fraud related to $130,000 in payments made in 2016 to porn star Stormy Daniels, allegedly in exchange for signing an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, after, I don't even like reading this, I didn't like writing it in the show notes, having sex with Donald Trump while he was married. You know, family values.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Donald Trump.
Real Christian guy.
Former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen has already served prison time for his role in making the payments. And the most serious charges are alleging that the payments amounted to campaign finance violations due to the fear that if that story became public, it would impact Trump's election chances. And little do they know, it did become public, and it didn't matter at all. Which I'm sure the
eggs on your face, Donald
Trump.
Yeah,
I'm sure the defense will actually use that. It would be smart for them to do so.
I mean, this is already the same crack team that is also arguing at the same time in front of the Supreme Court, saying that if Donald Trump were to have put SEAL Team 6 out to kill his opponent, it would have been fine.
Right, that presidents are immune from any criminal prosecution. Right.
So, I mean, this ain't beneath them.
I hope that the Supreme Court just does the most insane thing and agrees with that. And then the next day, Joe Biden shoots Donald Trump in the face. So the jury selection lasted 3 days. It included a lot of scrutiny of potential jurors' social media posts, including they had to read their social media posts in front of Donald Trump, calling Donald Trump like a piece of garbage.
Right, where the prosecutors were just literally just listing off all the posts.
Man, I would have loved to have just been in there just for that. I know I don't live in New York, but put me in the jury pool just so that you can read some of the things that I've said about Donald Trump. I would love, love, love to be able to read it.
You're just on
to
the,
him.
You're just there saying, you know,
you're going to die tomorrow.
I've got a podcast.
I said that 37 times. And that's only officially. Unofficially, I've said it hundreds more.
And now let me say to you right now.
I predict you will die tomorrow. And they also made everyone say where they got their news from.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And you had there's only one juror that said they got their news from Truth Social. And he did say that he gets news from many different sources.
Including
Truth Social.
He wasn't
a Trump fan, but I'm sorry, if you have a Truth Social account,
you're too far.
Yeah, that's too much. Just get screenshots from other news sources like everyone else does.
Well, and we're a little late to the game here because I know we took a week off, but...
You were out of town.
I was out of town. But like last week, there was a huge amount of discourse around doxing of the witnesses by Fox News and other conservatives and just releasing their information out there. And just like what was considered appropriate for this. I mean, this was like, I think, I don't know. I think there was like one or two witnesses that were even at the room like bawling, knowing that they had to like be on this case because they were afraid for their lives.
Well, yeah, because Trump supporters are crazy.
Right. I mean, this is like a big deal to be like picked for one of these. Like, I feel legitimately bad for those people.
Can you imagine if you were on the jury for like the Hunter Biden tax evasion case? You wouldn't care.
Right.
It'd be like no big deal because there's not rabid Hunter Biden fans that are going to kill you.
Right.
So, again, just shows the difference between the two parties. But so far, after I think 5 days
yes
of testimony Witnesses called by the prosecution have included former National Enquirer publisher, I swear this isn't his name, David Pecker, who detailed an arrangement he had with the Trump campaign to buy exclusive rights to stories that were damaging to Trump and then bury them while being repaid by Michael Cohen. And we're not going to detail a lot of it, but it included like a one-year affair he had with somebody else, rumors of a illegitimate child. So Trump definitely does just grab him where he says he does, I suppose. Today, we also had testimony from Trump assistant Rona Graff, who testified that she saw Stormy Daniels at the Trump Tower around the time of the alleged affair, but that it may have been related to a potential appearance on The Apprentice.
What?
Right, that she saw Stormy Daniels there at the time. That's what the prosecution was setting up. She was there, so this was a real
thing. This happened, but it's like, it may have been for his sleazy reality show.
Right.
And not his sleazy presidential campaign.
Not his sleazy personal life. And we also had banker Gary Farrow, who detailed multiple phone conversations he had with Michael Cohen to create a shell company, Essential Consultants LLC, which was used to pay Daniels, but was officially supposed to be a real estate consulting company to collect fees for investment consulting work, according to paperwork filed by Cohen. And that would be why Michael Cohen went to prison. Jail. So we'll see where this goes. I don't think, even if convicted, I don't think this is going to be jail time. Like I said, the most serious charge is that somehow this amounts to election campaign finance fraud, which is going to be the hardest thing to prove. I definitely think he's going to be found guilty of fraud.
Yes, I feel like he would have to be found guilty. I know we're biased, but even just looking at what the evidence is, I feel like he just has to be guilty of some kind
of
fraud.
This is the USA, Joe.
I know.
Nobody goes to jail for rich people, white collar crimes.
Well, and you didn't even bring up the whole gag order thing where he's getting constantly reminded, hey, don't do that.
Right.
Don't, I'll fine you. Don't do that.
And he just keeps violating it anyway.
You know, because this is nothing how, like, the average person gets treated by court systems, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is how it works.
Yep. You just get yelled at by the judge every once in a while and no real consequences. And that's exactly, he's going to get fined and they're going to have to pay, like, a big financial penalty. Big. And it's going to be, like, probably, what, like, $100,000 or something stupid. And that's going to be it.
That wasn't the note I wanted to end the story on.
Sorry, but that's where I see this going. Oh. I don't think they're going to be able to get him on the campaign finance because I think that's a stretch. This was always the least exciting of the trials.
Right.
But is the only one that we're going to get apparently this year. So we'll see what happens. But I'm not terribly invested in this one. And I don't think it's a corporate white collar crime. No one ever pays any penalties for that. You get a harsher penalty for stealing food from a grocery store than what corporations do for fraud and stealing millions of dollars.
But that doesn't mean, though, that other people can be found in trouble if they're not Donald Trump. Because in Arizona, a grand jury recently indicted Rudy Giuliani, former Trump chief of staff Mark Meadows, and 16 other Republicans for attempting to overturn the 2020 election. Trump himself was not charged, but was listed as an unindicted co-conspirator. Some of the fake electors, just for note, are Kelly Ward, the former state GOP chair from 2019 to 2023. Two state senators, State Senator Jake Hoffman and State Senator Anthony Kern, who was photographed in restricted areas outside the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th attack. So, you know, real good guy. Tyler Boyer, an executive of Turning Points USA, you know, that fantastic organization that also, I believe, has a school in Arizona.
Yep.
And who now serves on the Republican National Committee and a bunch of others I don't care about because they all suck.
All with connections to the Republican Party or conservative groups. No big surprise.
No surprise at all. The charges being brought do include fraud, forgery, and conspiracy, which are class 2, 4, and 5 felonies. I mean, this is, I think, big for Arizona, especially in an election year.
Still waiting for our seemingly toothless Attorney General Josh Call to do something here in the state of Wisconsin, where we also had a scheme to push false electors, including our own U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.
Yep. And he's not doing anything about it.
Nope.
because he's afraid of being seen as partisan.
Instead of just
doing his job. Drives me nuts. But I'm glad to see that it is happening and that this crap won't happen. I mean, there were others that were also involved, but it's just, this needs to be known that this can never happen again. And while it may, to like the untrained eye, seem vindictive since it takes so long, welcome to our court system, of course, it's nice to know that at least states are doing something about it.
And in our next story, there have been pro-Palestinian protests spreading through college campuses across the country.
The biggest problem we are facing as a world today.
Anti-Semitism on college campuses. These protests actually have roots in the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS movement, which began at the NGO Forum at the 2001 World Conference Against Racism in South Africa, where Palestinian activists met with members of the anti-apartheid movement and shared parallels between their struggles. So this is not just a recent development since the October 7th attack by Hamas and the asymmetrical response by Israel to essentially wipe all Palestinians out of Gaza. This is something that's been going on, just like the oppression of the Palestinian people in Israel, for more than 20 years. And this became national news after riot police were called to break up a protest encampment at Columbia University in New York, resulting in over 100 arrests.
Including Ilhan Omar's daughter.
The tent encampment still remains, however, as students and faculty are now in negotiations with the college with extreme radical demands, including to stop doing business with military weapons manufacturers that are supplying arms to Israel, stop accepting research money from Israel for projects that aid the country's military efforts, stop investing college endowments with money managers who profit from Israeli companies or contractors, and to be more transparent about what money is received from Israel and what it's used for.
Long story short, hey, university that I go to, can you stop profiteering off a jet? Aside, please.
Essentially, it's not outrageous demands. They're not asking for all Jewish students to be removed from campus or anything even close to that.
I heard kill all Jews when you just said.
Right. And alongside the Columbia protests, and now especially since that became news, protests have spread across the country. There were around 150 arrests made at NYU, New York University, on Monday, including 20 faculty members, after police were called to break up a protest there at the University of Southern California, where, as we were just talking about before the show, the number one overall draft pick Caleb Williams is from. They announced their May 10th graduation ceremony would be canceled after 90 protesters were arrested on campus. There are encampments present at MIT, Harvard, George Washington University, the Fashion Institute of Technology.
All right, go get them.
The University of Pennsylvania and Northwestern. Arrests were made during protests at Emory University, Indiana University Bloomington, Ohio State, and Connecticut University. And protesters have barricaded themselves into campus buildings at California State Polytechnic University Humboldt.
And you don't have this listed, but I just saw today that there were students in Paris that were also protesting on their own campuses as well.
Well, that would not be across the country.
What do you want, man? I'm trying to add stuff.
So it's an international affair.
Well, I'd say it's now the guys.
There probably have been protests, you know, in other parts of the world as well this entire time.
But that's what I was going to say. Is like, this is definitely they shot themselves in their own foot type of situation. What I mean by they, I mean like the universities, the schools, and conservatives altogether. Because while you said before, you are correct, there are probably protests throughout the world already, but not to this level. And to be honest, if it weren't for Columbia University calling in riot police and then media outlets saying that this was just a crazy, outright anti-Semitic riot that had to be dealt with immediately, it wouldn't have pissed off more students around the country and the world. Mm-hmm. So literally, because they're so bad faith in how they treated these student protests, it became a national movement.
Mm-hmm. So let's briefly discuss. So as you said, critics of these protests have alleged that they are violent. They are intimidating and bullying Jewish students. They're encouraging violence towards them. They're destructive anti-Semitic riots on campuses. I've watched a lot of video coming out of these. I have not seen any violence directed towards Jewish students or faculty members or just Jewish people in general. I've not seen any actual evidence of that.
The only one that I know of is there was one guy somewhere that said that like Jews should be happy or Jewish students should be happy that I'm not killing them right now.
That was at Columbia.
That was like, okay. And then literally like a little bit later, I think he wrote like an entire statement apologizing.
He said Zionists.
Okay.
Just to be clear as to like, I still don't agree with that sentiment, obviously.
But still.
Like, but yeah, that they.
It's not Jewish students, it's Zionists, which right. is also a huge, and I would argue at this point, intentional misunderstanding of what is going on.
And he did later apologize. And the larger organizing group at Columbia said that does not echo their sentiments. That is not the values that they are pushing in this protest.
Well, and credit to the organizers at the Columbia University protest, because they have like been very good at saying this is exactly what we're doing. This is exactly what we're standing for. Don't get up. And they've been staying true to it, even though mass media outlets have been constantly pushing that they've just been going crazy with this anti-Semitic rhetoric, which is just blatantly false.
And the BDS movement that I talked about, for years the Israeli government has been spending millions of dollars to paint them as a violent anti-Semitic terrorist group, where again there is no evidence for that. So the fact that all of these media organizations are picking up that same charge now against these peaceful campus protests is not really that surprising to me.
No. And even though there's not evidence of student protesters being violent, there's been plenty of evidence of the police being violent.
Right. There's in those videos, there is, just like the George Floyd protests, there is a lot of police brutality going on, including the video of an economics professor at Emory University in Atlanta being slammed to the concrete and handcuffed after she questioned the use of force by police while they were arresting a fellow professor. And she was falsely charged with assaulting an officer when the video clearly shows that was an absolute fabrication. So the police never lie, Joe.
Ugh. When we're talking about these mass arrests as well, we need to understand that these arrests are just literally for trespassing, which is what civil disobedience is.
Right. It's these encampments. The university makes a rule saying you can't have these types of tent encampments. They say that everyone that's in them is trespassing. They call the police and the police
arrest you.
Right. Break skulls and break it up and arrest everyone for trespassing. That doesn't mean that they had to call the police because there was some kind of violent uprising on campus.
Well, right. And even like in theory, I'm not opposed to the process of civil disobedience, because I do believe that when you are participating in civil disobedience, you should also expect to be facing those consequences of those actions. And that includes being arrested. However, that does not include, like you said, getting your face smashed in because the cops around you are scared to freaking death about what's going on because of how much is the game played up by people around you.
Well, and they, a lot of cops love just abusing their power. That's why they became cops in the first place.
Drives me nuts, man. And I mean, again, this is just another good example of how just nonsense conservative or moderate or centrist, I don't know what you want to call it, it's all the same bullshit. At the end of the day, reactionary nonsense just fuels moral panics throughout this country, and people get hurt because of it. You know, I even saw like Mehdi Hasan post on Twitter about this, where he was saying something like, if you are more upset about the students protesting about the mass graves in Palestine more than the mass graves, we got a big freaking problem on our hands. And I fully agree with that sentiment too. I see way more people getting outraged about the kids these days and how dare they protest on their own college campuses that they're paying to be there for. It, screw off. It's so ridiculous.
That certainly harkens back to the protests about the Vietnam War.
I was actually going to say that too. Yes.
Was right there?
Well, correct. And that's the thing. Like, you can make some argument that there's a little bit of a difference, where I would also agree that just by the nature of this conflict, and I mean the larger Israeli-Palestinian conflict, that people can presume or feel intimidation without actually having something happen to them. I think seeing a lot of people around you saying that what's happening is absolutely terrible and that the Israeli government's awful, and you've been told all your life that you have to be supportive of Israel because you're Jewish, sure, you can be intimidated, and I think that's okay. I'm not going to dismiss those feelings. But besides, like, that particular situation...
And I'm sure, just like we talked about with the one guy in Colombia...
I'm sure there are plenty of people saying stupid shit. Right. Like, and there absolutely. Are probably
some signs that are inappropriate and things like that are racist or anti-Semitic, but that certainly does not color the tone overall of these protests.
Absolutely. But besides, like, that circumstance, though, how is this any different than the Vietnam protests? It's so hard for me to fathom any other differences. And again, what a shocker. We're villainizing the college students doing this. I wouldn't have done this in college. I wouldn't have cared or known enough to do something like this in college. I wouldn't have been courageous enough to do something like this in college. So keep going. You got my support, at least. I don't know about that jerk Jason over there.
Never went to college. Sorry.
Yeah. can't empathize at all.
I don't know what it's like, all of that. But yeah, I certainly support anyone protesting the genocide of Palestinians in Israel.
Yeah. And again, civil disobedience, that's fine by me. Next up, we have an update on TikTok. After recently passing the Senate, President Biden has now signed the bill that would force ByteDance to either divest TikTok or face a ban in the U.S. entirely. In the Senate, the TikTok legislation was included as part of a $95 billion package that provided foreign aid to Ukraine and Israel and was passed 79-18. Conservative critics immediately jumped on how terrible President Biden is for even thinking about banning the thing that they've been preaching about for years now. I even have one of our favorites, Charlie Kirk, on here, who tweeted out saying, "Biden just banned TikTok. It won't go into law until January. He is so controlled by the tech companies that he is risking his support with Gen Z. Young voters won't forget this." Except, like many conservatives, like Trump, he's been actively pushing for the TikTok ban for years, tweeting out things like "ban TikTok." Breaking: President Donald Trump just announced on Air Force One that he'll be banning the evil CCP compromise app TikTok. It's just garbage, man. Constant grifting, constant disingenuous people are just being...
Well, when it was a Republican-controlled administration...
This is what they pushed for, literally.
...was considering banning TikTok or pushing to ban TikTok, he was all for it. Now that it's a Democratic administration, it's the worst thing ever.
Right.
It just shows Charlie Kirk does not have any ideology.
No, but I would also argue Republicans don't have any ideology. They just react to whatever Democrats are for, and they'll say, "Nope, we're against that now." That's all it is. It's just reactionary garbage over and over again. By the way, did you see the TikTok CEO?
I have not been paying attention to this news other than the fact that it passed. But beyond that,
It's in the article.
We had a whole episode about it. So.
Yeah, right. It's nothing different, by the way. The video's in the article that we'll link. We both looked at the TikTok legislation when it was passing the House. I don't agree with it. I would vote against it if I was in the situation.
Yeah. Do we need data security? Yes. Specifically from TikTok? No.
Does this legislation...
From all social media and all digital...
Right. So does this legislation actually solve what it's trying to do? No, absolutely not.
Nothing. It does nothing to protect the American people.
But I will say...
It'll help the Meta stock price.
Well, yeah, that too. I will say, though, I do have to chuckle every time I hear TikTok talk about free speech all day long. The government's taking our free speech away from you.
Well, and as we talked about, China can shut up when it comes to censoring free speech. I don't want to hear that from China, but this is just stupid because the whole thing is like, data privacy, data protection, only if it's a Chinese-owned company. The stupid thing is China can still just buy the data from Meta or from Elon Musk.
Yep.
And it's fine.
And they
it's
will.
Perfectly legal.
They will.
And to make money, they will definitely sell it. They don't care. And nothing is avoided. No privacy is protected. Nothing. It's just bluster and pompousness from people who don't understand or just don't care about how technology works. So it's just stupidity.
And so now, while this wasn't surprising in the least, Biden said that he would sign it months ago when we talked about TikTok. What do you think is going to happen, or how do you think this is going to affect the election in November now?
I don't think it's going to have any direct impact on the election because it's not going to take effect. And I think they did that on purpose. But this will be forgotten by the time November rolls around.
I 100% agree with you, and I'm glad you said that, because I'm also highly skeptical of, like, there's tons of chatter online, like, oh, Biden threw away his chances with Gen Zers. Oh, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible.
One, they don't vote in enough numbers to make any difference anyway.
And number two, like you said, they're not going to remember this because nothing's going to happen. So I think also Democrats need to chill the hell out before they start freaking out saying that Biden banned TikTok and ruined his chances with young voters. And that's why he's going to lose the election.
And let's not pretend that this isn't bipartisan.
Well, that too. Let's be real here. If young voters who were, I guess, still like heavily disagreeing with Biden because of the Israel-Palestine stuff, and this was going to be the thing that was going to send them over the edge, right. Like, God bless them.
M&M's will not be satisfied until every last cartoon character is deeply unappealing and totally androgynous, until the moment you wouldn't want to have a drink with any one of them. That's the goal. When you're totally turned off, they've won.
Boy, ain't right.
For Foxed in the Head this week, I wanted to give us a little bit of a break. This is not really going to be
Is this a break?
This is like red meat to us. As we've mentioned before, we are both atheists. We both come from activist atheism. That's where we met. This is some old school throwdown. This is perfect for the both of us. I needed to do no research on this. The only thing that makes this political is just who it's coming from, which is Tucker Carlson.
So, and to be honest, I haven't listened to any of this yet, so
yeah,
I'm excited.
Right. So, Tucker Carlson, recently on an appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast, somehow got into an evolution debate. And how you can stare Joe Rogan in his dumb gorilla face and say that evolution doesn't exist, you are really delusional.
You were divinely created.
You were made in the image of God.
What?
Well, he's like, what? So, just for context, before we play this clip, the conversation comes. I will give Tucker Carlson, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, I will give him some credit.
Well, that's scaring me already.
They're talking about the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
That's not where I thought this was going to start.
Right. You wouldn't think. And Tucker Carlson says that the right, the political right in America, is incorrect on this topic, that dropping nuclear bombs on a civilian, an innocent civilian population, was wrong. He calls it evil, which I wouldn't have thought that coming from Tucker Carlson, that would be his position.
I'm actually kind of shocked too.
Right, but I do agree. And that he says that they should save the nuclear bombs to drop on data centers to stop the advancement of AI.
What?
Because AI is, you know, going to enslave mankind.
Okay.
So
now we have anti-AI nukes.
Right. So we're going to blow up the data centers so that the AI will stop Skynet before it happens. And once again, I think this is like the fact that we call these machine learning algorithms that literally just make predictions based on human inputs that they receive. Somehow we were calling this AI, and everyone has accepted that this is somehow like
iRobot
consciousness.
We're officially an iRobot now.
Right, which it is not at all. It's not artificial intelligence. Joe Rogan then said, he interjected, you know, with his own version of stupid.
Okay.
And postulated that AI may be the next step in evolution.
What?
Of course, that's not how evolution works. At all. It doesn't have like a goal in mind or like
our next step evolution is artificial. What? I'm so confused.
That's how he was defending
like, okay, in the weirdest like dumb way I can actually understand what he's probably talking about. It's that like ridiculous sci-fi way of like cybernetics and
yeah, like who are we to kill the machine,
right?
But again, we're not really talking about anything that would be considered conscious or alive in any way, shape or form anyway. So these are just two dumb people.
So that's how this starts off.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
That is the start of this conversation.
That's already.
So
wait, before you, that's already crazy. We haven't said anything. This is not even the clip yet, man.
No.
That's already insane.
It's just the setup for how they got here.
Oh my God.
Because if you don't have that information, you'll be confused at the very end. Throughout most of this, it's just standard apologetics.
All right, I'm
but
ready.
Let's take a listen.
I'm so scared.
Evolution is real. And if there is this
is
constant,
it real?
I don't know. But it's visible. Like, you can measure it in certain animals.
You can measure adaptation.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that evolution. In fact, I think we've kind of given up on the idea of evolution. The theory of evolution as articulated by Darwin is like kind of not true.
Right? In what sense?
Well, in the most basic sense, the idea that, you know, all life emerged from a single cell organism and over time, and there would be a fossil record of that, and there's not. And
there's not a fossil record of transitionary species, like species that are adapting to its environment.
There's tons of record of adaptation, and you see it in your own life. I mean, I have a lot of dogs. I see adaptation in dogs, you know, through the...
Sure.
Litter to litter. But no, there's no evidence at all that, none, zero, that, you know, people, you know, evolve seamlessly from a single cell amoeba. No, there's not. There's not. There's no chain in the fossil record of that at all. And that's why you don't actually hear people, you hear them make reference to evolution because the theory of adaptation is clearly, obviously true. But Darwin's theory's totally, that's why it's still a theory almost 200 years later, you know. We have not found that at all. And I can't even guess. I mean, I have my own theories on it, but they're not proven.
What are your theories?
God created people, you know, distinctly, and animals. I mean, I think that's like, I think what every person on Earth thought until the mid-19th century, actually.
Right. But
it's not a new idea.
They didn't have computers. They didn't have a general understanding that we have today of the process.
Do you think we understand more now?
Yes.
Really?
You don't think that we understand more today?
We understand way less. We understand so little that we're actually sitting here allowing, like, a bunch of greedy, stupid, childless software engineers in Northern California to, like, flirt with the extinction of mankind.
Oh, man. That's a lot to go through.
2 minutes was too much. You need to break this up so we could take it piece by piece.
Do you want to?
No. I listened to it once, and that's all I'm going to listen to. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Oh, first
so let's
off.
Just start at the beginning.
Let's start at the beginning.
Is it true? No, we've given up on evolution.
No, hey, I'm going back to that clip again. Because where Joe Rogan says, evolution is absolutely true. And Tucker Carlson goes, is it true? And he goes, I don't know. Joe Rogan for you in a nutshell.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And it's two people who don't understand evolution arguing about evolution, which is funny.
But this is also this is why you and I and many, many others criticize Joe Rogan and his podcast. He has the ability to have the best minds of anything come onto his show, knowing
the most popular podcast,
knowing that he has the most popular podcast in the world. I understand that you can't be an expert on everything. I understand that as well. But when you have something like this, where clearly, like, you both have no clue what's going on right now, and you're trying to do this, like, banter around the water cooler shtick, but you're just like, duh, the entire time. This is why we have so many stupid people right now. It's because of crap like this.
Where they're getting their information.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. Sorry.
So let's take it point by point.
I'm ready.
Evolution is disregarded today.
Darwin's evolution is disregarded. There's adaptation.
Well, completely not true. And again, I have to say it because this always irritates me, and it's said all the time that somehow evolution was Darwin's theory. It's not. Evolution is an observation. We see things in the fossil record where we see these changes over time. We know evolution happened because we can see it. It's an observation.
Correct.
Darwin's theory is natural selection.
Correct.
That is the mechanism behind evolution.
My other favorite is always when you have people say, well, Darwin was wrong about things.
Right.
And I'm like
other things.
And I'm like, yeah he was. He was a guy.
Yeah. Well, and that was a long time ago, and our knowledge has definitely increased since then. But again,
did it though?
There is no evidence of evolution. Completely untrue. There's no fossil record.
Jack, that one blew my mind.
I mean, you can see literally evolution of all life on Earth at one point was aquatic. Us coming out of the water, turning into reptilian, then mammalian species, and even we have the whales who went back into the water. And all along the steps, we keep the things from each previous iteration that were wholly unnecessary in the new environment, like how whales have little tiny hips and legs that they don't need or use. Those are the types of things we see in the fossil record.
Well, and even like with us, like, we have things called junk DNA.
mm-hmm.
because of our evolutionary ancestry.
Well, and that's a whole other line.
Yes.
So we can talk about the fossil record, which is one line, and that's, you know, what they had in Darwin's time to go by. And we had all these classifications of animals and how tigers are more related to lions than they are to dogs. Dogs are more related to wolves. And I'm sorry, Tucker Carlson, dog breeds are not species. That's not
from litter to litter.
Adaptation. That's artificial selection. That is humans breeding different traits into dogs. They're all one species. That's again just not understanding evolution at all.
Well, can we also go back to the fact that he said multiple times that all of human life came from one single celled organism?
Right. That there's no evidence that we came from a single cell, which is abiogenesis, which is not evolution. We actually don't know where abiogenesis came from. Where did life come from non-life?
Well, right. But again, it's...
But that's not... I mean, that doesn't have any... It's once you get life, what happened? We can see that.
Right. But what I'm trying to stick on is the fact that he kept saying it was just one thing that made everything from there. Just one tiny little, like, single cell, and everything came from just that alone. Not even given... Like you just said.
Right.
They could have been a multitude of things that could have also sprung up simultaneously. We don't know that. And we're also okay with knowing that. But to say that we for sure, like evolution says, all came from one thing.
Right. Evolution does not speculate on the origin of life.
Your side says we came from two people. That is your story, not ours.
Well, and one person and a rib person.
Sorry, I mischaracterized it.
a rib homunculus.
Oh.
And not only did you have the fossil record.
You should have told me to take notes when I was listening to that. There's too much.
And then, as you said, we have genetics. Mm-hmm. Genetics could have completely falsified natural selection, could have completely falsified our understanding of life on Earth.
Or my favorite understanding of genetics is we don't need the fossil record to show that evolution happened just through genetics alone.
Right.
That's how strong the evidence from genetics is.
Right. And the fact that genetics goes along with the fossil record and what we had thought relations between animals were
correct
before genetics, the fact that those two things agree almost 100% with each other and where they disagreed, we changed it. We're like, okay, so we got this and wrong, this is wrong.
So the whole thing's wrong is what you're saying.
Right, yeah, because they made like 5 mistakes out of like 10 million species. No, but the fact that those two things line up should show you how powerful the idea of evolution and the concept and how correct it really was. Because it could have been completely upturned by genetics and in fact was just further solidified. And then, of course, we have the favorite argument of creationists. It's just a theory.
Oh my God.
And that's why it's still a theory. After 200 years or whatever, it's not been 200 years, but I think that's what he said. A theory in science is the strongest explanation for an observation that you can have. There is nothing beyond theory. Gravity is a theory. That is the best explanation we have.
Well, and even then,
it doesn't mean when people say theory, what they mean scientifically is hypothesis.
Correct. But even then, he does the whole thing where he's like, well, I got my own theories and they're also not provable.
And he doesn't.
Well, then Joe Rogan goes, well, what is it? Magic.
Yeah, that God created everyone.
Cool.
That doesn't explain anything.
Cool, I'm glad.
It is not actually even a scientific hypothesis. It doesn't even qualify for that. But yes, you do not have theories. You have nothing.
Oh, God. I hated every bit of that.
I figured you might.
Oh.
This was definitely a good blast from the past for me. Got to revisit. And it's nothing new. Like, that's the thing. These arguments do not change. Even though they've been so thoroughly argued against by people way smarter and way more knowledgeable about the subject than us. But even people like us are able to refute them without any... Like, I didn't do any research on this. These are things that are common knowledge for people with remedial understandings of science and biology. It doesn't take much to just completely debunk Tucker Carlson's weak, weak contradiction of evolution.
Well, and even then, what was his whole thing at the end? Like, where he's saying, well, do you think we understand more now? And Carlson's
right.
Like,
no.
No.
I think we understand less than we did in the mid-19th century.
Well, and his reasoning was because we have childless...
Yeah, because software and this designers? Is the AI thing. Because we're letting these nerds who don't even have any kids destroy humanity with AI. That's his argument. And he even like proposed it to Joe Rogan. Like, do you think we know more than we did in the mid-19th century?
Yeah, man.
Guffaw. Like, what the hell are you talking about? You are on a podcast. Being delivered around the world at the speed of light.
I always remember like that one Family Guy skit from back in the day where it was like at some kind of like science fair or whatever it was. And there was like this old guy that had a thing about the light bulb. He's like, what is this? Not impressive to you? This freaked me out when I was a kid.
Yeah, just...
That wasn't fun. I didn't enjoy that.
Just good old-fashioned creationist buffoonery. Not really political, except from the fact that it was coming from Tucker Carlson.
Why is Joe Rogan having Tucker Carlson on? God, that makes me so angry.
And did you catch the weird laugh? Like, it almost sounded like it was a third person in the room. That was just Tucker Carlson laughing.
Oh, yeah.
And he did that multiple times.
He laughed at his own. He was like...
And he was like... It was like the weirdest laugh.
Well, because he was saying that like these ideas haven't been around for a long time. They've been around, you know, since the like...
Yeah, it's not anything new.
The 1800s. Like, oh my God, dude.
And that's... He did that multiple times during the interview, that weird laugh.
Oh.
But
oh,
there you go.
He's the worst.
Just some good old non-consequential, not really political.
Nothing but the best for the most popular podcast, an influential podcast in the entire world.
Oh, having the person that used to have the highest rated cable news show in the country.
Oh.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? It's hard to get any word in with this clown.
Let's talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Or devilry, evil, and I can't think of one for I.
Igloos. Or my favorite one, DEI, didn't earn it.
Ooh.
Yeah, get that real racism in there, you know. But I actually want to start this segment off with a bit from Charlemagne the God, who guest hosted The Daily Show, and he made a decent amount of headlines by actually talking about DEI on national television and being honest about it. So let's take a listen.
The truth about DEI is that although it's well-intentioned, it's mostly garbage. Okay? It's kind of like the Black Little Mermaid. Just because racists hate it doesn't mean it's good. And you know I'm right, because every one of you has sat through one of those diversity training sessions and thought, this is some bullshit. And it's not just you. Over 900 studies have shown that DEI programs don't make the workplace better for minorities. In fact, it can actually make things worse because of the backlash effect.
And we'll include the entire video in the show notes for you to watch. I highly recommend watching it. There's also a supplemental podcast that he does about it. It's really good. But what we want to do for this episode is have an honest conversation about what DEI is and what it does, what conservatives think about it, and what we actually think about it.
The real deciders.
Right. Two white men.
With a podcast.
With the podcast. And that, my friends, is what gives us not only the permission, but the obligation.
Mm-hmm.
It is our duty to inform you about what
the mandate
minorities appreciate. And we're canceled. Oh, now we can have our own
tour.
This is perfect. Oh, we're gonna be so good.
I'll get a Netflix special.
Oh yeah,
great.
And you don't have to be funny at all. It's gonna be so good. All right, I'm already not funny. Oh, it's perfect. But what is DEI? Well, according to Elon Musk, DEI is just another word for racism. Shame on anyone who uses it. And then I also have here, because he of course can't have his own full beliefs, he has to always repost somebody else's, a Twitter rant from Bill Ackman, which I think we've talked about during the Is the Left Anti-Semitic episode, who's basically the guy who doxed all of those Harvard students. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just read some of this and see what conservatives or enlightened centrists such as Elon Musk and Bill Ackman think DEI is. Under DEI, one's degree of oppression is determined based upon where one resides on a so-called intersectional pyramid of oppression, where whites, Jews, and Asians are deemed as oppressors, and a subset of people of color, LGBTQ people, and or women are deemed to be oppressed. Under this ideology, which is the philosophical underpinning of DEI, as advanced by Ibram X. Kendi and others, one is either an anti-racist or a racist. There is no such thing as being, quote, not racist. What are your thoughts so far?
This is just the exact same argument that I heard against CRT.
Yeah.
It's just taking a misunderstanding of some of the aspects of CRT and saying that that's all it's about. It's just this one section.
And I'll also actually include an entire interview that I'm sure Bill Ackman has definitely listened to of Ibram X. Kendi explaining why he differentiates between not racist and anti-racist. And he's talking about on a systemic level where you need to participate in a society at a systemic level. And if you are participating in a society that has racism, you're a part of being a racist, or you are passively involved in a racist system. So that's why he says you shouldn't just be not racist, because being not racist in a racist system doesn't do anything. So you should be against that racist system. But that's way too much for Bill Ackman.
Right. You can't, that doesn't fit in a post on Twitter.
Right. But he goes on. According to DEI, capitalism is racist. Advanced placement exams are racist.
According to anyone who's really looked into it, capitalism is racist.
Mm-hmm. But you're so close, Bill. You're so close, man. IQ tests are racist.
Well,
oh, Bill.
They really are, Bill. Like, it's fundamentally set up for people that learned in the American school system and had the access to that learning. And not, say, a group of people who weren't allowed to even learn how to read.
I was like, what, just better support and resources during school?
So, like, yes, it's fundamentally, by looking at the history of our country, it is racist.
Corporations are racist. Or, in other words, any merit-based program, system, or organization which has or generates outcomes for different races that are at variance with the proportion these different races represent in the population at large is by definition of racist under DEI's ideology.
It's not racist by definition. It's racist because how else would you explain that distribution?
Well, that's okay. That's my favorite part about this, right?
You just be like, yeah, well, black people are just not as smart.
Thank you.
They just don't succeed. That's the only other explanation.
You took the word. I'm so angry. You took my point. Because that's it, right? There are only two possibilities here. You have the idea that it's either external or internal. DEI or CRT or whatever you want to freaking call it, proponents like me and Jason will say that society impacts what happens to you. You can have some autonomy to what you have, but it impacts your opportunities around you. It impacts how far you can go. And we literally just talked about IQ is strongly related to with the support you have during your education in childhood.
Well, it's taking a test.
Well,
so it's like how well you did on that test. Does it really mean that's the measure of your intelligence?
Right. So it can either be all that or not. And if it's not everything around you, the only other solution is it is you. So if we have disparities in races, you are then therefore saying black people and other people of color are meritless, I don't know what you want to call it, than white people. That is the only conclusion you can make.
Mm-hmm. They have less merit.
Thank you.
Yes. So either the system is somehow
unfair
and generating these outcomes where on the whole, like white males and especially rich white males are always at the top of the system, and the more oppressed a minority you are, the further down the ladder you are. Either it's the system somehow doing that, or that is just somehow just the natural order of things. Those are the two options.
And can we just quickly talk about and address, because he's doing it right here as well, this nonsense of like the oppression Olympics and saying like, you are either an oppressee or an oppressor, and that's all you are, and that's all you ever will be, no matter what happens.
It's just a way to talk about when we talk about the system and how things are arranged and to explain it so that you understand the hierarchies involved. And that's where it ends. And you're like, well, see, that's the whole thing. That's what they're teaching. That's the entire point of it.
Well, and I think it's like so dimwitted that you hear something like, well, over centuries, white people in the United States have had the vast majority of power and they have oppressed people of color.
And women and...
Right. And your response is, but I don't do that and I'm white. Right. Like, that's not how this works, man. Just because you... Jason, we are white men, right?
I am.
I do not see myself as a freaking dictator who constantly tries to oppress others. Mm-hmm. And shockingly, I can have these two thoughts that right. I am and not an active oppressor, but know that I also understand how privilege works in right. this country.
And that we do benefit from living in a structure that promotes us over other people. Like right. it does happen.
Right.
And yes, I have benefited from that. And would I change it if I could? Yes. But does it make me a bad person?
Right.
No, that's not how it works.
A very easy way of showing that in Milwaukee County, at least, is that how segregated we are.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a predominantly white school in Milwaukee suburbs. And because of that, I had probably some better resources that people in predominantly black schools did. That's not fair. And that's what we were trying to address with things like CRT and DEI, by bringing those disparities to light. I am not smarter than anyone who goes to a different school.
Right.
With the more implementation of technology, or the continuing implementation of technology in the classroom, more and more students nowadays are just getting access to things like iPads and Chromebooks. I mean, for God's sakes, like middle schoolers are just getting Chromebooks to take home in some of these suburban schools because they are better off. They have financially better off institutions that can afford these resources, that can just lend them out and afford students to not have to return them because they can always just replace them later on. Poorer schools can't do that. And students at poorer schools do not have those same resources. And when you have that type of disparity, which I'm sure people wouldn't disagree with, we then have to take it one step further and say, okay, so we have these disparities between schools. Why isn't it predominantly students of color who go to the school that don't get laptops?
Mm-hmm.
Are they just all stupid? Is that why they don't get laptops?
Well, and they're also more likely to have parents that work multiple jobs, don't have time to
or have
spend.
To work themselves.
Right, right. Or they have to work or take care of their siblings. Those things all influence your learning or your ability to take these types of tests.
Right. So there are three other things I want to read from this screed and we can be done with it. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. When one examines DEI and its ideological heritage, it does not take long to understand that the movement is inherently inconsistent with basic American values. Our country, since its founding, has been about creating and building a democracy with equality of opportunity for all. Millions of people have left behind socialism and communism to come to America to start again, as they have seen the destruction leveled by an equality of outcome society.
Which is like those two things and the distinction between them are just completely made up by conservatives.
Well, that too. But also, the balls you have to have to say that DEI is anti-American because America's based on creating equal opportunity for all? Buddy.
Well, I mean, that's what it says. If you just read the document, you ignore the things about who is three-fifths.
Who's writing the document?
Who's three-fifths of a person and who's not, and, you know, all those types of things, and who can vote. As long as you ignore all of that and you just read the all men are created equal part, then yeah, then sure.
Then America's the greatest country right. in the world.
And I love how, like, all these people fleeing socialist countries. Yeah, I don't know, man. Look at any of the social democracies in the world and look at their education rates and their test scores compared to the U.S. And I don't think we do very well.
And finally, DEI is racist because reverse racism is racist. I can't even get through that without laughing. Even if it is against white people, and it is remarkable that I even need to point this out, racism against white people has become considered acceptable by many not to be racism, or alternatively, it is deemed acceptable racism. While this is, of course, absurd, it has become the prevailing view in many universities around the country.
Cite your sources, please.
And of course, this was half of his screed, man. There was so much more, but I'm going to summarize it and say, of course, he starts to go on and quote about Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and how we all should live in a country where we're not valued by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character.
And this idea that, like, well, it's okay to be racist against white people. To them, racism is just saying because you're white and our society was just completely objectively created to benefit white male landowners. That's not controversial at all. There's no way you can actually dispute that because it is the way the country was founded. Because you are a white male in this society that was built for white men, you benefit. To them, that's racism. To just say that, like, just say facts. That's you're being racist against white people. And the idea that you can't be racist against white people is actually definition of racism, right? Structural racism. When you talk about racism racism being...
You're talking about systemic power, right?
Right. So you can say, you can either define racism as you hating a group of people. So that's one way you can define racism. You can also define racism as systemic racism that is keeping one race down. We talk about Gaza and the fact that Israel has so much control over Gaza and is actively oppressing Palestinians. That would be a systemic racism. And if you're a Palestinian, you cannot use systemic racism against an Israeli because you don't have any power. You can't. Right. And it's the same thing. Like in America, like I said, everything was set up for rich white men. So you cannot use the American system against rich white men because they're in control of it.
Well, and he even gives it away in his own statement by saying reverse racism. Reverse racism as a phrase became popularized as a way of saying you're being racist towards white people. The fact that you had to use the phrase reverse racism and not just racism to begin with shows your hand immediately, because if you actually didn't have all the power, you wouldn't have to use any qualifiers like reverse racism, because saying that, you already know where the real racism comes in the first place. Ugh, but we got through it. And now that was stupid, but I think it's worth going into, because this is what a lot of people believe DEI and CRT and any like talk about systemic racism is. And usually, like you said, it's just some random nonsense, misunderstanding of what our history is, refusing to acknowledge that history, and then quoting Dr. Martin Luther King. That's usually what it comes down to. But that's not what DEI is. That's not what it's ever been. And granted, while DEI has a term become more popular since the George Floyd protests in 2020, this stuff has been going on for many years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at what DEI actually is. And to look at that, I have an example from Indiana University School of Education's Office of DEI. And just listing out what they do can show you what this office actually does. For their mission and goal, they state, "We aim to create an equitable and inclusive environment for learning, research, and service by honoring, respecting, and embracing diversity within the School of Education and the surrounding communities." And then they list five functions of what the Office of DEI actually does. Number one, communications. Our communications function involves how we connect with our stakeholders and community within this office. And they'll do things like create newsletters, create media initiatives, things like that. Function two, outreach. The outreach task of DEI includes working with multiple offices to enhance the recruitment of students, faculty, and staff from populations underrepresented in the School of Education. And I've also seen in other schools, including like the University of Michigan, which I'll also link in our show notes, that includes things like trying to target underrepresented schools, trying to go into neighborhoods that usually don't go into because your university doesn't get students from that area. Trying to find people and encourage people to apply.
Well, because they're dumb, Joe.
Right. Number three, programming. Within the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, the programming team works to host events and programs that encompass the DEI vision.
This is brainwashing, right?
These programs are planned and led entirely by our office to enhance student life by offering resources. So, seminars, some programs, student days stuff. Cool. Number four, ongoing support. Mentoring is a major component of the DEI office ongoing support function. DEI student ambassadors serve as college mentors for high school students, sharing stories about college life, walking students through college and scholarship application processes, and providing both academic enrichment and social support. And finally, research. The Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion implements our research function by evaluating how School of Education communications, outreach, programming, and support services align with our diversity mission.
Horrible, evil stuff.
It's just the worst. So I also wanted to take a second to talk about what I thought about DEI at this point and share our personal experiences with it. Do you have any actual...
Years ago, when I was with Time Warner Cable, we had diversity training, and it was just kind of like a meeting, very short meeting with a group, like a random group of people, where we just talked about biases. And apparently I have a bias against religious people, which is definitely true, but I think worked in my favor in that meeting, because they showed us like pictures of people, and clearly the old nun was supposed to evoke sympathy.
Sure.
And I scored her very low on like the whatever it was, trustworthiness or whatever. Sure. But it was again meant to show you that, like, oh, just because she was a, you know, a nice old lady, a nun, that you were supposed to think that she was, you know, know, a good person, but really she did these horrible things. Where I was the opposite, where I was not on board. I figured she probably lied to and abused a lot of children, and then actually it turned out that she wasn't so bad. And
so you are a bigot.
Yeah, definitely when it comes to
nuns
and Catholicism in general. Yeah. You molest like thousands of children, I'm sorry, you're gonna get a bad rep.
So I actually have like a weird gambit of experience with DEI trainings. I've gone through corporate DEI training, which is kind of just what you said. It's very well, okay, I've had two instances of that where I've had a live like corporate style DEI training. And I've also had one of those where like, diversity program trainings, where it's just like an online module that they make you go through.
Always the best type of training when you're not even paying attention.
Well, then,
like, where's the question so I can click the answer?
And even then, like, the trainings on these two are just so lazy. Mark said to Julie, well, I don't know why you think that you should deserve to something. Just because you're black doesn't mean you should get the job or something. It was like,
was Mark right?
Yeah, right? No, Mark was being racist. Like, and I personally, even though I am in full support of DEI and understanding the DEI trainings, as you can probably tell from earlier in this segment or any other episode we have ever done, I'm not a big fan of DEI trainings, of how they're actually carried out.
Right. Well, because it doesn't actually lead to any meaningful change.
Right. Well, and then on the other side of that same gambit, so you say, okay, this is just a corporation thing. They don't actually care. I've had DEI, or I've had like a 2-day DEI training for the Democrats. You can't get more woke than this. And even then, dude, I don't know, maybe I'm just like a super racist guy or something like that, but like the training was nonsense. And I mean that as like I was angry that they aren't talking about things that they should be talking about. And what I mean by that is they're not talking about in these trainings systemic structures on how we probably should be talking about them. They're saying like, hey, we need to create belonging and we need to understand how people feel when they belong. And it's like, this doesn't do anything for me. We're not learning anything. And then at the same, one of my favorite memories from that training, because remember, these are all legislators, right? And these are supposed to be the radical left. At this training, there was a representative. He was a black man from Milwaukee. He's a Milwaukee rep. And he goes, look, I get this vulnerability stuff and whatnot and being an ally, but here's the deal. If you want to know what perspective of a black man is, I need you to help me defend Milwaukee. Because when they say Milwaukee, you know what they're talking about. When they say Milwaukee are sending criminals to our cities, you know what they're talking about. When you say the Milwaukee education system is bad and they're all delinquents over there, you know what they're talking about. I need you to help me defend Milwaukee. And guess what? These super woke, radical left, white progressives immediately, right after that, voted to damage Milwaukee by not helping them fund their own stuff. They immediately took the Republican bait and talked about how bad the crime is in Milwaukee. These DEI trainings don't actually do anything, at least in my personal opinion. And when they do anything, it's on the smallest of small scales, because the people who are going to listen are probably people who are already well invested and are probably aware of these issues already.
And it usually generally puts the impetus on the people with the least amount of power.
Right.
In the organization. It's like, yeah, you can talk about structural problems with racism, and we do it all the time, but none of us can do anything about it. Like, if you want to talk about diversity in the workplace, how come 99% of executives in Fortune 500 companies are white men?
Right.
Like, that's the issue. It's not because Bill says racist stuff sometimes.
Right.
That's not the issue. Like, yeah, Bill's kind of a jerk, but ultimately, he's not keeping anybody down.
Exactly.
You know,
well, and one training isn't going to fix it either.
Right.
So then that probably brings me into like what the reality of the DEI trainings is. The problem with DEI trainings is, like we said before, they just don't do much. And a lot of it's because curriculums vary widely on what training you receive. I got very different experiences at my three different places of employment, and they were all nonsense in their own different ways. And that's also because a lot of this stuff is not evidence-based. I'm trying to, by the way, look up the actual evidence of DEI trainings, and at best, most of the positive effects are short-term, but those usually fade away within a couple of days to like a month. And even then, a lot of those positive effects in the research are because of small sample sizes. Once you start getting up to higher sample sizes, they don't even appear. So as a whole, these trainings are largely ineffective. And that's usually at best. At worst, like Charlemagne the God said, it actually can increase backlash from other white participants if done incorrectly. Now, while I and many others would probably just want to slap a lot of these people across the face and stop being so stupid. We can't do that. And when people like Bill Ackman talk about there's oppressors and oppressees and these groups are in the oppressor and these groups are the oppressor groups, that literature is out there. And that literature is also accurate, by the way, like we talked about earlier. But I've definitely seen instances, I'm sure you probably have as well, Jason, of corporate DEI trainings where they just straight out say, if you're a white person, you're just an oppressor. And it's stupid and it's cringy.
You're kind of talking about the white fragility.
Right.
Who wrote that, like that kind of training.
The Robin DiAngelo type. Yeah. Like, it's a thing. And are they far and few between? I would say absolutely. The majority of DEI trainings are what we talked about, which is usually nothingness that we just click through.
It's really about, again, protecting the company against lawsuits, because that's what companies are actually concerned about.
Right. But that doesn't stop people from getting angry about it. Numerous companies have now received lawsuits alleging reverse discrimination. Again, we got that reverse card being played because of their DEI programs. America First Legal, which is a far right-wing extremist legal firm, led by Stephen Miller, of course, and we've talked about him recently in his connection to Trump, has filed dozens of complaints with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission targeting companies' DEI efforts. You can even see it on their own website, encouraging people to sue their companies and places of work if they are white and they feel discriminated against.
And of course, as the whole reason why we're talking about this, as we've seen, this is the new boogeyman for conservatives. It's replacing CRT.
Which replaced
cultural Marxism and
politically correct and
everything down the line. It is literally, this is just a short list of things that conservatives and even conservative legislators have blamed on DEI. The Silicon Valley bank collapse, train derailments, anti-Semitism on college campuses, it all comes full circle, a panel on the side of a Boeing aircraft ripping off mid-flight.
We did that for our Fox in the Head segment.
The drone strike in Jordan that killed three black American soldiers, by the way. I like how DEI killed black soldiers in Jordan. And as we talked about in the last episode, the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. All of those things happened because of DEI, according to conservatives.
Well, and this campaign against DEI is causing real damage, too. I just saw literally today that Iowa universities are shutting down their DEI programs on campuses because the state legislature passed legislation banning DEI on college campuses throughout the state. And my God, I can't believe this quote exists. Wendy Winterstein, the president of Iowa State University, said during a hearing that these will help make rural white students feel more comfortable. Quote, so one of the first things we did was establish learning communities so that a young white man from rural Iowa could come and be in a learning community and find a place where they could belong. Because God forbid, the rural white man in Iowa can't find a place where he belongs.
That's a real problem.
But they're scared. Universities are legitimately terrified. In Wisconsin, we saw that Republicans were trying to completely defund our UW system and avoid giving adequate pay to professors who already earned that money unless those schools ban DEI on their campuses.
Well, and of course, it's working because of the lawsuits. It's exactly what I said. The whole reason why these companies have diversity training to begin with was to avoid lawsuits. And now when they're getting lawsuits from places like America First Legal, of course, they're reversing course and getting rid of those departments. Because at the end of the day, it's all about making money.
And you're right, because there have been a multitude of articles reporting how large companies have been abandoning DEI. Large companies like Meta, Tesla, DoorDash, Lyft, Home Depot, Wayfair, Zoom, and X have all reported significant cuts to their DEI programs in 2023.
You mean Tesla, the company that's been sued multiple times for racial discrimination?
Now, is it because DEI is bad? No. Most of these companies were in the middle of broad layoffs to begin with. And guess what typically gets cut first? It's always inclusion of black people, by the way. Also, many of these companies are also simply outsourcing their DEI programs to consultants as cheaper options.
Don't I know it.
And other companies are simply renaming or rebranding their DEI offices and rethinking about how they're going to do DEI in the future. There's a good article that I'll include. I have a ton of good resources that I'll include, from like studies to articles against like from an honest place about DEI, what's working, what's not working. And maybe we can actually figure out in this corporate structure what actually works and what doesn't work and actually have real solutions things. What does the data actually show what works? It ain't mandatory trainings. It's actually, like Jason said, top-down solutions that create a company culture of including people who do not look like you. And if it's not that, and not actively that over a sustained period of time, then you're not going to achieve the results you want to achieve.
As with most problems in society, the answer is not going to come from corporations.
You tell me the marketplace of ideas is it going to solve this issue?
I don't think anyone outside of your Charlie Kirks and your ghoulish Stephen Millers are going to honestly argue that there is not a diversity issue in America. As I said, and it's certainly the case, it's probably like 98% of the top corporate executives of Fortune 500 companies are all white men. And it's not even just white men. It's like Ivy League educated white men.
Yep.
And that is a problem. That is a systemic problem. It's created a caste system in America. And it is really hard to overcome that without some type of change. And it's those same people that are in that top caste, like your Tucker Carlson's, like your Stephen Miller's, like your Charlie Kirk's, who oppose any kind of change to that system because it benefits them and it benefits their children and their children's children. They don't want that to end, which is why they're fighting so hard and even mounting these legal challenges to put a stop to any kind of movement that would see broad changes to that system.
And that's the real problem here, right? Like, it's the fight of status quo versus change, which is what it's always been. And when people talk about, oh, we're just using identity politics and stuff, like, no, because they're doing the exact same thing to argue for the status quo. At the end of the day, it's that rich white people want to maintain power over others. That's all it is.
And that's why they make up all these lies about what DEI is and vilify it. And they try to even get the people who it's designed to benefit on their side by saying stupid things like, oh, well, now whenever I see a black pilot, I'm going to think he's not qualified for his job because he only got it because of DEI. It was the exact same thing they successfully did
with Claudine Gay.
And with affirmative action, where you even had people who it benefits arguing against it because it made them feel like everyone who looks at me thinks I'm only here because of affirmative action.
Right.
Well, they only think that way because that's what they've been told by conservatives, by the people who have benefited from an unfair system forever and are upset when there's any kind of change.
Correct. And that's also why you need to immediately dismiss when people say that we need to live in a merit-based society, in a meritocracy, because the idea of a bias-free meritocracy is a complete myth. It's nonsense. And that's what DEI tries to correct. Granted, there are plenty of problems with it. Plenty, but still worth having.
Mm-hmm. And I would say the number one argument that I've ever seen when it comes to any of these types of programs is always, or at least boils down to, anytime you see someone who is not a straight white man in any position of power, that means that there was a more qualified straight white man who was passed up for that position, who is not taking their rightful place at the top of the hierarchy because it was stolen from them by someone else. And that is just obviously ridiculous. That is what Charlie Kirk is saying when he says, every time I see a black pilot, I don't think he got there based on merit, because clearly a white pilot would have been better. And there's no reason why you should have black pilots. That is what he's saying. That's what the opposition to all of this is. That's what the opposition to affirmative action was. Why would a white male student not get into Harvard? They should. There's no reason why there should be blacks, Latinos, women in that position. They're stealing it from a white man. And if that argument seems ridiculous to you and racist and sexist, that's because it is. And that is what all of these arguments against DEI boil down to.
Thank you for listening. We hope to see you in the next episode. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at ThinkProPod. You can email us at thinkpropod@gmail.com. And remember, when in doubt, think progressively.
Watch any of the draft?
I saw that we got an offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
You got a the Michigan quarterback.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
I'm not the biggest J.J. McCarthy fan. He's fine. I mean, we'll see. I'm more of the very athletic quarterback fan, like, you know, Jaden Daniels.
Sure.
Or even Michael Penix, who it's weird that Atlanta took him after they just paid $180 million for 4 years of Kirk Cousins.
Right.
It's kind of strange.
Who did the Bears take again? They took another quarterback, right?
Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
The consensus number one overall. So they did fine. They got their receiver. I'm more excited about the Vikings' second pick, that they got Dallas Turner, who for a lot of people is like the best defender in the draft. He's an edge rusher, so.
Okay.
I like that. The thing that worries me is, like, even if both of them pan out, they basically replaced Kirk Cousins and Danielle Hunter with Kirk Cousins and Danielle Hunter. Like, they didn't do anything with them anyway, so,
right.
You know, who knows, but we'll see.
I mean, I was okay with the Packers pick. I mean, we definitely needed offensive help.
Yeah, it was not the best pick.
No, but they never do well in the first pick. Like, I've never really been, like, happy with their first round picks.
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone hated the Jordan Love pick, and
right.
know, that seems to have really worked out for him. So.
Right. Well, we'll see after 1 year.
Yeah, well, I mean, he doesn't suck.
I mean, that's the thing. Sorry, I'm definitely a Jordan Love fan. Like, I love my Jordan Love, but I think now people are kind of riding a Jordan Love high a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. he did way better than what you thought. I was very happy with it. I'm just waiting to see how people are going to react once he settles a little bit, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have a couple bad games and, like, just, well, are you going to let him be? No. No, you're going
to
be dicks about
it. Well,
he
definitely had a couple of bad games this year.
He did.
Early on in the season, and he seemed to.
Yeah, and that's when they were throwing him away. No, he's not the guy. He's not the guy. Can't do it.